Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're about to have a conversation with Dr. Alondra Nelson, whose latest book is Body and Soul, The Black Panther Party and the Fight Against Medical Discrimination. Professor Nelson is also a member of the Institute of Research on Women and Gender at Columbia University. And Alondra Nelson, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Mark. Hello. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure to have you here. I understand this book is also your PhD thesis. Did I get that right?
It was, yes, many years ago. That's how it began.
And it wandered into a book.
And it wandered into a book. And hopefully it's much more readable than a PhD thesis.
Well, it is. Well, you definitely want that to happen. But, but I said before you came on the air here, by the way, folks, the lines are open at 410-319-8888. Is that this book, you may, in many ways, given where we are with healthcare and the things we're facing in America, it's kind of a new look at who the Black Panthers were through this light, is, I think, a very relevant document for 2012.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, so many of the problems that the Black Panthers raised and, you know, other health activists of this time are still with us, right? You know, people can't get access to care even though they want it. Poor people are left with care that's often disrespectful or that's sometimes abusive or coercive. Many things have changed, but a lot remains the same, particularly for poor communities of color with regard to health care. It's still a major issue. It's still a major area of inequality.
Now, one of the things that in your book, this was fascinating, some of the things you brought up, that in some ways, if this is a rewriting of the history of Black Panther politics and its existence.
Sure.
That's part of what you're trying to do here.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm not, you know, as I said, I often say, you know, I'm not trying to replace the Black Berets with halos, right? But I think, you know, there's a whole bunch about the Black Panther Party that we still don't know. And this healthcare politics is one of them. And I think it's important. I mean, these stories of empowerment and agency. I was listening to a caller early before I came on talking about the war on poverty and issues of community empowerment, or these are still critical issues. And these are, I think, things that can help people think in different ways about getting access to health care.
So when you put this book together, then one of the things you talked about here, and this is because I remember this period very well, and when the People's Free Medical Clinics began to be built, one was built in Baltimore here, that, as a matter of fact, still exists. That was founded in the early 70s by the Panthers and white community organizers from other neighborhoods, and it still exists, and it's no longer run by those groups, but it still exists as a people's medical clinic.
Right.
But this was like a kind of real split inside the Black Panther Party when it happened over forming these clinics.
Sure, sure. I mean, your listeners will recall that there were, you know, a faction of the party who wanted to really rededicate themselves to the community service programs. They were always a part of what the Panthers imagined their work was. And then there was a group who were more interested in effectively being underground guerrillas, and this would be the sort of Eldridge Cleaver faction. And so the party would turn towards the social, you know, the social movement, social justice and community service course. And the sort of expansion of the health programs was part of this deliberate shift in the party.
So, one of the things I also find interesting in your book that I think few people have written about is that you brought in the influence of the great theorist and physician Frantz Fanon,
yes,
and the revolutionary and physician Che Guevara, both as kind of influences on this move to deal with health care.
Right. Yeah, I think one of the things when we push beyond the sort of confines about which we've typically thought about the party and think about the party through the prism of their healthcare politics, if we can imagine the Panthers as a health activist, then lots of other things open up for thinking about the party, including different ways of thinking about what we already thought we knew about the party. And clearly one of the things we already thought we knew about the Black Panther Party was the really formative and important role that the writings and the ideas of Frantz Fanon and Mao, of course, you know, the Panthers famously sold the Little Red Book as part of their fundraising in the early days of the party, and many of them claimed to always have had a copy of the Little Red Book in their back pocket. And of course, Che Guevara, who was also important to the party. So, typically Fanon, just to take Fanon for an example, is thought is sort of connected to the Panthers as sort of animating the Panthers' ideas about revolutionary violence, and that was certainly true. But both in A Dying Colonialism and The Wretched of the Earth, which were the texts that were required by all members of the Black Panther Party and even their allies, so even the white, you know, doctors and nurses who worked with them, include chapters and conversation about the ways in which medicine and healthcare can be used for political good and political harm, using the case of colonial Algeria. And so, so I'm able to sort of give us another way of thinking about how the Black Panther Party used Fanon. And one of the interesting things with regard to Fanon is, in A Dying Colonialism, he writes these sort of political case studies. So he says, this person comes in and they have these issues or have these physical complaints. But the diagnosis for Fanon is always about colonial oppression, about racial inequality, about discrimination. And the Panthers sort of take this up in their newspaper and in their newsletters. So there's a lot of personal narratives, personal stories about poor blacks in particular and communities across the country and healthcare issues that they face. But the Panthers, following Fanon, always couch these health issues and broader political issues.
And it was also one of the things that you write about with Fanon, is as you mentioned a bit here, is that he saw medicine as part of social control.
Right.
And this was part of what people people still are battling about this. This is still a relevant issue in this 21st century as it was in the mid-60s.
Sure. Among other things, in the way that sociologists understand medicine is as a social institution that has various forms of authorities. Doctors have authorities over patients. Medicine as an institution is a powerful institution, particularly as it gets more commodified. There's a lot of both economic and sort of intellectual power that comes with medicine. And the Panthers understood this. And one of the things I'm trying to convey in the book that's opened up to us when we open our imagination of the Black Panther Party as health activists is that we usually think about health activism as being about getting access to various forms of resource or medicine or these sorts of things. For the Black Panther Party, their health activism was also about protecting black communities from medicine when it was used not for health, for healthful purposes, but for social control. And I write about a case at UCLA in 1972, in which the Panthers were involved in blocking state funding for a center that, among other things, proposed to do medical experimentation on the brains of black and Latino boys and men in Los Angeles.
Center for the Study of Reduction of Violence at the University of California in 1973.
Yes,
that's what you're talking about.
Yes, that's right.
I mean, and some people that part of that group even. And I was shocked. I mean, I had forgotten all about this. That they were discussing doing psychosurgery.
Yes.
Around why Watch rebellions occurred and people being biologically deficient, people who were prone to violence, who needed to do psychosurgery to cure these people of violence.
Yes, that's right. And psychosurgery was a big controversy in this period, and then there would be congressional hearings around psychosurgery that would lead to some legislation in 1978. But this is the early days of it, and, the Panthers are right there in the middle of it. It affected disproportionately. Some of the proposals were to do this kind of experimentation in the psychosurgery on people who were incarcerated. And so, the Panthers had, obviously, a particular critique and a particular, subjective experiences with the way that medical power works in particular in the context of prisons and jails. And so they challenged that by hiring, effectively, by working with a radical lawyer, a lawyer who's affiliated with the National Lawyers Guild, which is, an entity that's still around and have come to the fore again with regard to the Occupy movement and working with members of the Occupy, activists in the Occupy movement.
We're talking with Dr. Alondra Nelson. Her third book. It's the third book, right?
It's the first monograph, but third book, yes.
Yeah. Body and Soul, The Black Panther Party and the Fight Against Medical Discrimination, professor in the Department of Sociology at Columbia University, where she is also a member of the Institute for Research on Women and Gender. 410-319-8888 is the number here. We'll get to these calls coming in just a second so you can join in on this conversation. We also have to remember that period of time that you write about as well. And we forget it was 1972 when the Tuskegee syphilis experiments were exposed. That was also in this moment.
that was also in this moment. There was a lot happening with regard to healthcare right now. Yeah, and to think back, it's kind of mind-boggling. Yes, this was the moment of Tuskegee. It was revealed July 72 in the New York Times, and a now famous article by Gene Heller. And often when I tell people about this work, they say, oh, well, the Panthers must have been responding to the Tuskegee syphilis experiment. That's how their health politics started, right? So the Panthers, obviously, they actually did have a lot to say about the Tuskegee experiment. They were highly critical of it. And for them, it just stressed all the more why Black communities needed health activism and why they needed health activism that was both about, as I said, access to care, but also protection from miscare or mistreatment, as they called it. And the interesting thing about this moment is that the Panthers' health activism starts, at least 4 years before Tuskegee's revealed. So well before, a particular crisis around race and health comes on the national stage, the Panthers are doing the work of health activism in communities all over the country.
So, let me take a step back here, because I think we need to really kind of focus a minute on what you talked about in great detail. Other people have written about it, but you're really in great detail about the People's Free Medical Clinics and right. What they did. I mean, this was, amazing. I mean, I just know Alondra just from here, being in Baltimore back then, before I left again, but was here when we found those clinics with the Black Panther Party, that they, I mean, there were doctors and nurses and dentists and psychiatrists and all these community volunteers who gave of their time to make these clinics come alive and work in them every night.
Yes, yes, indeed. And this was happening all over the country. It was happening in Portland. It was happening in Seattle. It was happening in Baltimore. It was happening in New York City. And a lot of these doctors and nurses and dentists were, kind of folks from white folks from the New Left. Some of them had been involved with the Freedom Summer campaign that had worked with SNCC and then went on to work in Panther clinics. And, I think this tells us also some interesting, important stories that we forget about the Black Panther Party. One, that they were, health activism requires that you collaborate with people who have medical expertise. And so there's a health activism for the Panthers was, it was a space in which they were critiquing medical power, but they also needed to work with people who had this expertise to reach the ends that they wanted to reach, which was better health care for Black people. Two, that the Black Panthers, from their beginning when they were working with the Peace and Freedom Party to the 1970s when they're running their clinics, were involved in interracial collaboration, an interracial coalition,
right.
Both in the clinics and outside of the clinics, and that's important to remember about the party as well. And yeah, some of the clinics, as I write in the book, they were often pulled together on a shoestring. The party in 1970 mandates that all chapters have to have clinics, but they're not able to offer any resources at a national level to the individual chapters to open the clinics. And so, there are lots of personal networks, friends, there's sometimes both Black and white medics coming back from Vietnam working in the clinics, and they were also training local community people to do basic health care services. So there was also this sort of sense of DIY health care that was operating in the feminist health clinics that were running at the same time. And the clinics ran with this volunteer labor. They were, some were open all day, some were open a few hours a night, all day and throughout the week. Some were often open a few days, a few evenings or a few hours out of the week. And, they did all sorts of services. You could get immunizations there. You could get screening for high blood pressure. Sometimes in the Berkeley Clinic, there were reproductive health services. Winston-Salem chapter had an ambulance service. Almost all of the chapters did a screening for sickle cell anemia, which was one of the big campaigns that the Black Panthers were involved in.
So before I jump into the world today, another piece that you write about I want to kind of throw out here, because we've had a number of shows on sickle cell anemia,
mm-hmm.
is this was a healthcare issue and a political cause the Panthers pushed. And you have in your book the poster of the Black Panther Party that they called it Black Genocide.
Right. Yeah. So, and you say it exactly right. I mean, it was a healthcare issue and a political cause. It was always both for the Black Panther Party. And the genocide frame comes out of a few different things. I mean, there had been Black activists in the mid-20th century had gone to the UN and declared that the way that the state treated African Americans effectively was genocide, and the way that the United Nations defines genocide. Genocide for them was also, and some of your listeners will remember the way in which just Black power activists talked about genocide more generally, and some of that had to do with regressive and not terribly progressive gender politics in Black communities. But it also referred just in general to the way that the state neglected Black people and Black people's lives and the value of Black bodies and Black lives. So the genocide language had a lot of different discourses. And with regard to sickle cell anemia in particular, what we now call racial health disparities, the Black Panthers were identifying with regard to sickle cell anemia by drawing on, you know, data that showed that the NIH and various philanthropies raised millions and millions and millions of dollars for similar genetic conditions, right, that were more predominant in white communities. And you had, you know, a fraction of this kind of money being devoted by the National Institutes of Health and other entities for sickle cell anemia, which was a disease that affected Black communities. And so, and as you said, you know, they put both a healthcare frame about this, so this is about people's livelihoods. And at the time, people with sickle cell disease were often not getting out of childhood. People live a lot longer now. So it was a real, you know, it was a really sort of acute, urgent issue because the children died so young with sickle cell. And of course, there was the political frame, which was a larger critique about the medical industrial complex, about, about the fact that the commodification of healthcare wasn't getting people well, and about the fact that the state, you know, after the civil rights, you know, recent advances of the civil rights movement, in which, you know, many, you know, particularly sort of moderate Blacks wanted to really embrace the facts that Black African Americans were sort of full citizens. Sickle cell anemia became, if you shine a light on the disparities in funding and these sorts of things, became a place where the Black Panthers could say, hey, wait a minute, you know, are we full citizens if the state does not give equal money to the diseases that affect us?
So I'm curious, given the work you've done on this and what grabbed you, obviously, is an era that came before you.
Indeed.
So why this subject grabs you so deeply, and what is it for you? What is its relevance for you now? Especially, I mean, you are somebody who deals with gender. You look at a lot of issues that we are going to have to wrestle with the future and technology. What is it about this that...
Yes. Well, I initially started thinking about the hurdles that Black communities were facing and thinking about HIV/AIDS. That's actually initially where this project began, dealing with the sort of spread of HIV in Black communities. And so thinking about that, I thought, well, let me think back a decade back. So, you know, if we think about the emergence of AIDS is sort of in the mid to late 80s, if we go back a decade, what was happening in the 70s? What were Black communities, how were they mobilizing or not mobilizing around healthcare issues? How had African American communities and poor communities mobilized around health crises and epidemics and these sorts of things in the past? And so this had led me to the Black Panther Party. I mean, I had heard, you know, there's passing mention in almost any literature that you pick up about the Black Panther Party about sickle cell. There might be one sentence, and maybe in that same sentence it might say health clinics, but there was nothing more. And so really the book began as a sort of detour in this research, you know, this initial question and thinking like, you know, how and why were they doing sickle cell testing? Where did they get the tests and these sorts of things? So that's where the sort of nuts and bolts of the project began. But more generally, I mean, my work is really interested in the way that African-American communities who have been historically and to our peril defined by scientific racism, by racist science, by ideas about what race means in science and technology, how have Black communities engaged these things? And so the larger body of my work is about that question, and the Black Panther Party is one case study or one way to think about that question. So it's not the case that African-American communities have, I mean, it's true that Black communities have been victims of what Harriet Washington and her wonderful book called Medical Apartheid, right?
Yes.
That's absolutely true, but that's only half of the story. And so I think that the Black Panther Party And in addition to telling us a lot more about the Panthers, in a larger scale, begins to tell us how African-American communities were responding to medical apartheid.
So I'm going to use a word. I'd like you just to talk for just a second about, just to describe what you meant by scientific racism that you write about.
Sure. So, well, scientific racism at its high watermark, right, is in the late 19th century, and it's one of the, it's, you know, theories that are used to justify slavery and these ideas that African Americans are sort of biologically different and innately inferior, and all of these theories about sort of race and science. And so we don't have in the same way, you know, theories circulating that are racist and explicitly, but there are still ideas about bodies and difference, and sort of there are consequences regarding what these differences mean. So, you know, in the Panther period in the 1970s, this idea that there might have been something about black male brains, for instance, that made people participate in the Watts Rebellion is a sort of vestige of this, even if it's not, you know, even if we wouldn't exactly call it scientific racism of the type of, you know, that we're familiar with from the 1850s.
I'm trying to figure out, we're out of time. I have another few minutes left. I'm just looking at my clock and my board here. But sorry about that, Alondra. But I'm really interested, because one of the things you also talk about is this is how it's as Henry Louis Gates said in his admiration for your book, as did Rebecca Skloot, that you talk about that even today, what African Americans face when it comes to poverty and medicine,
yes,
is sickening, quite literally sickening.
Yes. Yes. Well, I mean, as I said, you know, many of these issues remain prevalent today. It's still the case that, you know, African Americans have disproportionate life chances with regard to mortality and morbidity rates, with regards to prevalence of diseases like HIV, which is a major problem, and also, you know, heart disease and other sorts of conditions. And you know, I think increasingly and unfortunately, we're moving towards sort of remedies that suggest that this is something about black people's bodies. And what the Panthers are useful for reminding us is that, you know, these things are also about inequality. They're about, you know, the Panthers write about, you know, the reason that people are sick is because there's rats and mice and roaches in their homes, or perhaps they don't have homes, or they don't have food. And what the Panthers did in their clinics was, I think, a wonderful model. So people might come to the clinic because they're feeling a sort of bodily ailment, but they would also sort of help them with housing and with food and these sorts of things. And I think the Panthers offer for us today a model that we, I think, would be, it would be a shame that we forgot about that sort of well-being. And I use the concept social health in the book is really more about than about, you know, solely bodily health, that it's about these, about, you know, having food and clothing and housing and these sorts of things as well. And so to say that things make people quite literally sickening today is, you know, about this larger terrain of what keeps people healthy.
Dr. Alondra Nelson, her book is Body and Soul, The Black Panther Party and the Fight Against Medical Discrimination, assistant professor of sociology at Columbia University. Alondra, it's been wonderful having you on the air, and I hope you will come back for some more ranging discussions on health and this society and other things you've been writing about.
Mark, I would love it, and I'm a big fan of your show, so it was a real
honor
you. To be here.
Thank you. It's an honor to have you.
Thanks.
Dr. Alondra Nelson, the book is well worth it. It just really raises some issues that people do not think about. Body and Soul, The Black Panther Party and the Fight Against Medical Discrimination. The Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the Maryland Mortgage Program, a community lending initiative of the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. The number is 1-800-638-7781. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Cricket Arison and Justin Levy. Our assistant producer is Cassandra Monsanto. Our intern is Alex Pearson. We're engineered by Akisa Gunn. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. To hear this show again, podcast any of our past shows, find new interviews, and find out information about our guests and their work, please visit us at the web, steinershow.org. And for Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.